This is the Cube Show on demand, presented by Ump Sports. Listen live weekdays 6 to 10. Get loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get crazy.
You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's the Cube Show.
This is All Born Radio.
I'm a good person.
Man, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God want us to win the World Championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I?
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
Brought to you by Phone Restore. If you dropped your phone or iPad and have that stupid spider web across the screen, I hate that too. Because your computer not working right, I know mine wasn't. Bring it to the guys at Phone Restore. Most repairs are done in less than 1 hour. Located at 900 Bob Wallace Avenue, visit phonerestore.com. Last night, we don't get a lot of baseball history that's not just sort of like gitchy stats. Bryce Harper with his first home run after 7:15, but before 7:19 on May 17th kind of things. But we did have some cool history happen in the Pittsburgh Pirates game last night. I'll let the local crew take it from here.
Okay.
They saw his dazzling glove and potential. And he has his first major league hit. At 2:49 South Africa time, Gifton Gopé has made history.
Awesome. Awesome stuff. That's remarkable stuff.
Gifton Gopé becomes the first Major League Baseball player in history to be born in Africa. And in his first at-bat, he got a base hit last night. So very, very cool to see that last night for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Real history happening there. That's the Phone Restore call of the day, brought to you by Phone Restore. It's phonerestore.com.
Pretty cool stuff. Not cool yesterday was a lot of the news coming down from ESPN. Jane McManus, Jason Stark, Trent Dilfer, Jay Crawford, who's been a staple of SportsCenter, Cold Pizza, First Take. I mean, he was there initially when Skip Bayless got rolling on First Take. Trent Dilfer, I think probably Danny Cannell was one of the bigger surprises that we saw, at least for me, I know it was. But a lot of folks without jobs today. And when I initially saw the names begin to come down, and I saw Brett McMurphy, and I saw David Ching, I mean, guys we've had on the show, I said, okay, this is. I see the direction that ESPN's going here. They're going to go the reporter route. A lot of those guys are going to be gone. Ed Werder was one of the first to be announced as being gone. I mean, I can remember Ed Werder standing outside of Arrowhead Stadium Sunday mornings when I was a kid talking about games. And it was a sad day. You don't like to see the gloating of seeing an individual lose their job that you don't like for whatever reason is one thing. Being in this industry and gloating about someone else in this industry failing, I think is all-time stupid. Because how is it going to get one company and not yours? That, to me, is the most ridiculous, asinine stunt that anyone is attempting to pull in this whole fiasco. The game is changing. Media is changing. We saw it. What, 5, 6, 8 years ago with newspapers? They're basically gone. It blows my mind when I check into a hotel on a Thursday or a Friday and the USA Todays are sitting out. And I always grab one because I think to myself, when am I ever going to get a newspaper again?
It's going to be the last one I ever touch.
Well, no, not that, but just I'm never going to go get one of my own. I can remember pulling my Chevy Impala, 1980 Chevy Impala, into the BP station near my apartment complex when I was at Homewood High School every single morning and dropping two quarters in the slot to get a USA Today. Mainly because I wanted to read box scores and read sports stories. I would actually give the front page away. Media is changing. Reporting is probably changing more than any of the other parts of it. And I want to get your thoughts on this and these changes, but I want to share just one thought of mine quickly. And maybe today's not the day to do it, but this is a huge story. And this is a huge story in the world of sports and how sports are being covered. Now, I saw a lot of people comment on the direction of the media, the direction of covering sports, where it's going. And I saw a lot of people who are journalists frustrated with who was getting let go yesterday. My parents taught me when I was growing up one simple life lesson. Always look at things from both sides. Be fair to yourself, be fair to whoever else it is, and try to think of things from both sides. You actually helped me with that a lot of times. I mean, I came in and was pretty upset about an email that I got from a coworker of ours before the show, and you sort of put me at ease and balanced me out a little bit, saying, hey, maybe it's just this. You were probably right. I was probably wrong. I think about all these guys who are covering these sports. And you think about these guys who have – Brett McMurphy has better sources in college football than anyone out there. I'll put him up against anyone. Better than Bruce Feldman, better than Andy Staples, any of them. Ralph Russo, when it comes to sources and being able to obtain information, I don't think there's anyone better than Brett McMurphy. I don't. Brett McMurphy's being paid by ESPN. Whatever it is, I don't know how much he makes, 50, 80, 150. I don't know what the going rate for a really good college football reporter is. When Brett McMurphy has breaking news, Tom Herman to Texas, the Cactus Bowl being canceled, Miami Beach Bowl moving, where does that news go? I'm asking you.
Oh, well, where does it go?
When Brett McMurphy has breaking news, where does it initially go?
Like, where does he put it first?
Correct.
Twitter.
How does that benefit ESPN?
It doesn't. See,
I've seen some people. You and I like a lot of tweets. We had a debate about this earlier. I told you that people are beginning to see me like tweets and then respond to me in defense of whatever the story was. Not really understanding that clicking that heart doesn't necessarily mean I agree with said story or I'm a fan of said story. It means I'll get to you later a lot of times.
Or you want to read more into it, or you think this is interesting, but you're just scrolling across. You need to get more information.
When I click that heart on a tweet, it means one of two things. I appreciate what you're saying. It's a thank you. Or it's a, I don't have time for this. I'll get to it later, which also means I want to use this in 10 after tweets. Those are the three things that I click that little heart on a tweet for. How many stories a day, links to stories on a website, do you favorite and then never get to? Because I know you treat Twitter very similar manner that I do. I come in here and delete 5 or 6 stories, articles, links to articles a day, maybe more. Because I just think to myself, I'm not going to get to that. It's too late now. We're not going to talk about that. Something else happened that's not important. I don't have time to read that. And I got hundreds of them saved right now that I'll never read. I don't click on websites to read stories. We get our information in 140 characters. It's not fair. Well, I won't even say it's not fair. Maybe it's unjust. Maybe it's product of the system. Because, of course, ESPN wants Brett McMurphy to blow his Twitter following up. That's valuable to them to have someone who's so well-respected. But how much content can you realistically push out that benefits the company? So I've seen a lot of people say and take the mindset of, well, ESPN just wants debate shows, and that's free information, which it's not free because you're paying people to sit there and debate. And then I've seen people attack analysts and say, well, they're not getting rid of any of the ex-jock analysts. Well, I'd be the first to step up and say our information is probably more valuable, at least in-game, in a live event, which seems to be the one thing that ain't going away. So it's unfortunate, and I don't like it, and I hate it, but I think we have to look at each side of this. And is it maybe very real that journalists are giving too much information away, providing too much information for free?
The thing ESPN only seems to get for benefit from things like Twitter, just to be as one sliver of the pie, is that you have guys who have ESPN in their Twitter handle. And I'm not 100% sure if ESPN requests that or wants that, or if more people want to do that because they want to be associated with the brand.
I think a lot of people want to be cool and do it, and they're proud, and it's basically a way of handing someone an ESPN business card.
But like McMurphy was McMurphy ESPN, but he wasn't. Like I would argue that Brett McMurphy doesn't need ESPN's brand to be.
No. He's got a huge following.
So I don't know if that's something that eventually they wanted, because he wasn't McMurphy ESPN when he first started. It eventually became McMurphy ESPN. There is an aspect of that, but there's one thing that needs to sort of be quelched when people say, you know, these debate shows, why are we going this way? It's because what you guys are watching. 500,000 people every day watch that First Take show. 500,000 of you. And that may not sound like a lot, but you know what Fox Sports 1 is getting during that same time slot? Like 80,000 people. And part of it's because ESPN's been there forever. Part of it's because people don't turn it to Fox Sports 1 or don't even think about Fox Sports 1 unless there's a live event. But you're on that channel, and you're not turning the channel away, and some of you are actually turning it in, tuning into it. So you guys want this. ESPN is making money off this because you guys are watching. So if you want ESPN to go away from debate shows, don't watch their debate shows. You know, I think one of the worst things I think to happen to ESPN, now that we sort of get to this, and we'll unpackage it a little bit more in the next segment or two. One of the worst things that could happen to ESPN is that they went 24 hours because they felt like they needed to fill the time. So once SportsCenter became a thing where they wanted to run that like 12 to 15 hours a day, you thought, great, we got our content. But the bad news is technology sped up and got past them much faster than they were expecting. You and I don't need highlight shows, Cole. Andrew doesn't need highlight show. You listening to this program does not need a highlight show. You don't need to wait on ESPN for your team's highlight. Cole, we remember waiting for the Yankees highlights.
Yeah.
Didn't have to wait too long. Yankees are a pretty top team. But if you wanted to see a Braves highlight, sometimes good luck. Sometimes you have to wait the whole show. Now, you can get it whenever you want. The Braves website gives it to you. Their Twitter gives it to you. Online, your phone grabs you anything you want. Highlight shows are irrelevant. And that's why you get Scott Van Pelt and Jamel Hill and Michael Smith doing the personality type shows that bring more pop culture into it, to try to make that time slot relevant. We don't need it. And that's the bad part. I think ESPN would be great as a channel that just played sports, talked about sports, and then replayed sports. And you don't have to replay games from 1982. You can play the games last night's. And look, I haven't been up at 2 o'clock in the morning watching normal ESPN in a long time, so I don't even know if they replay the last night's game before. Do they still do that?
I don't know,
because I'm not up. It used to be that like the Yankees Red Sox last night.
Yeah, and it would come on before SportsCenter.
Yeah, it would be on from like 3 to 5 or 2 to 4 or something like that.
Yeah, the ESPN primetime college football game was the lead in to the 5 o'clock SportsCenter replay.
Yeah, I would say just keep doing that. But yeah, I'm not the executive. People are turning away from ESPN because of things like this, because of debate shows. But I'll tell you this: you're not unsubscribing because of it. That's a falsehood.
I don't understand the mindset when people want to attack ESPN by saying their model doesn't work. They're losing subscribers. And the only subscribers that are being referenced are people cutting the cord and cord cutters. because the other networks are obviously being affected there as well.
Everybody is losing subscribers.
Cutting ESPN. That is not possible. Now, does ESPN take a bigger financial hit with every cord that's cut? Yes, absolutely.
You know why it's such a big deal for ESPN? Because they charge $7 a person. Because they're the biggest, baddest guy out there on the planet. Because they have basically been grandfathered into all of these cable packages. Because that's just the way things were when cable first came out and ESPN first got on it. You can't just cut ESPN. Cable doesn't work a la carte. They haven't figured that out yet. But you know what they're not counting? They're not counting people like me. I'm a cord cutter. But you know what I am subscribed to? ESPN. I pay for ESPN.
Right, you're going to have your games.
But Nielsen doesn't count me because I'm not a cable subscriber. But I have cut and then re-gotten in but via different method. There's at least 3 million of us on Sling that do that.
They don't account for those. Let's get to 10 After Tweets brought to you by First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweets!
Anthony Oliver at AOKO1975 tweets in at Cube Show. All those guys ESPN let go deserve better. It's sad we created the beast. I feel like this is going to be uncovered later and talked about more later. But just from a journalistic standpoint, covering games, I think we're going to look back and we're going to say, avenues like Twitter helped destroy modern media because of the way we consumed our media and we gave away too much information.
And by the way, it's not about...
I tell you right now, Brandon Marcello tweets an Auburn article that I want to read and it's a pay site. I'm out. I'm done. I don't even think about it again. I don't even look at it. You can have it, man. I'm not paying. Why would I pay for that when I can... thousands of other things I can go see.
But there are a lot of people that do pay.
Sure.
A lot of people are sure. ESPN subscribers. A lot of people are insiders. A lot of people are message board people who pay to be a part of a
My point is there was a time when you had to pay someone something. Almost everyone had to pay for some sort of avenue to get their information. You had to pay for cable. You had to buy a newspaper. You had to subscribe to something online to go see it.
Had to buy the Sports Illustrated.
You had to buy, you had to go to the grocery store and pick up your Lindy's to learn about college football, whatever it was. And now you don't have to do that. I'm getting all my information for free.
Andrew Alford tweets, on replays, not to mention you can access the replay on ESPN Go app, which is true, watch ESPN app. The only bad news is that they're a TV channel, too, and you're trying to fill that inventory. I don't know how many ShamWow commercials I need or infomercials, but you know what I could use? Just replay the game a couple times. Odds are I didn't watch all the game for the most part anyway, or most of us didn't
watch. You're going to see more ads via digital content. That's coming. Get ready for that.
Oh, yeah. ESPN got fat. And part of the reason they're making these cuts is because they realized they got fat, and they were too slow to see that they got fat.
John Isom at JD Isom tweets at Colcubic at Arcachet at Cube Show. ESPN manages to monetize McMurphy's tweets through him creating traffic to the website or TV. I agree with that in a very, 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 very small extent. There's a very small reality to that statement. How much traffic can McMurphy push to ESPN.com or a show through him tweeting?
Listen,
I'm not picking on Brett. That's not just Brett. It's anyone who covers a sport. Just think about it. If you need someone to click on your articles to survive, if you're giving the information away and then writing an article about it, it's not how many people then are clicking your article. How many people have you kept from clicking your article by sharing the information first? And so if you have the news that Tom Herman will become Texas's new head coach, I don't care if it's a one-sentence article. Should it not say, Texas has hired with a link? If you're doing it the right way, if you're being paid by that entity, but if you just tweet, Texas has hired Tom Herman, That doesn't benefit where your paycheck comes from at all.
No, but you do know that the drawback is people hate doing that extra click, too.
Absolutely. I don't do it.
Because a lot of people, especially watch on Facebook and Twitter, people just like, clickbait, not interested in clicking on your link, just give me the information. I don't want to click. I don't want to. People don't want to click.
Right. And all I'm saying is there's a very odd juggle here of how much are we giving away and how much is that costing, how much is that taking away from the hand that feeds us, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about it more after the break.
Welcome back live into Cube Show. Arky Shea here, Cole Kublik there. Stand Up Live this weekend features Carly Aquilino. She is of MTV's Girl Code fame. She's going to be in town tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday. Got your chance to win a pair of tickets to see her at some of these shows coming up starting in just a moment. We're hoping to have her in studio today. She's supposed to be coming from Nashville. Had a show there last night. Coming in studio near the end of the show today. We may have to get her on for tomorrow. But we're hoping to have her on. Anyway, you can go to standuplive.com is where you can get the tickets to her show and many, many other shows, including myself, Friday, May the 5th, as I'll be on a guest set with Matt Mitchell, who is what you're looking for on Friday, May the 5th. That's next Friday. But your chance to win a pair of tickets to see Carly tonight. It's a great date night. I may want to take the wife out to this one tonight. It is her birthday. Mrs. Arky is turning an age I'm not allowed to reveal. But it's her birthday, and I may take her to this one. So if you want to go to tonight's show, got a pair of tickets for you by texting in the word girl code to 910-663-5663. That's 910-663-5663. Text the word girl code in and you can win a pair of tickets to see Carly Aquilino tonight at Stand Up Live Huntsville. She's got one show tonight, two shows tomorrow, and two shows on Saturday. FYI, maybe listen a little bit later, give you a chance to win more tickets to see Carly this weekend. So, Cole, we're talking about some of this ESPN layoff issues, and they laid off about 100 people yesterday. And if you were watching on Twitter and on sports Twitter, you probably saw a lot of the names go by, the Trent Dilfers, the Brett McMurphys, the Danny Cannells of the world got laid off. And then you got, you know, big news like ESPNU moving its headquarters from Charlotte to Bristol to cut off some of the production costs. Also, they're going to be airing some MLB Network programming to sort of cut down on production costs. They're going to be reducing people like our friend Ryan Russillo and his role on the company as well. They're going to be just doing a lot of just cuts. Now, the cut, Cole, about $100 million, and this is what I want to say about the ESPN layoffs, is that they cut off $100 million. Do you know that's 1.25% of the total money they get from just subscriber fees? It's a drop in the bucket. It's a drop in the bucket what they did. This is the very minimum, basically, that they would be able to do. ESPN employs thousands and thousands of people.
No, but there are other things that they're already pushing towards doing, like moving ESPNU to Bristol.
No, I understand. The big deal is being made out of that they cut up $100 million yesterday.
Sure, yeah.
Which is obviously a big deal should be made. But this is a drop in the bucket. My issue is clearly this. ESPN got fat. And ESPN, in a race to the top, much like a lot of college football programs do here with all their money and buying brand new facilities and just making everything state-of-the-art and pretty, 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 and Texas wants to give a $10,000 locker room for a locker per person with 43-inch TVs, is that eventually some of this money will stop coming in. The market always corrects itself. And the most people who are unsubscribing from ESPN are unsubscribing from all of cable TV. So Fox loses them, Food Network, TBS, everybody is losing these subscribers. ESPN just makes the most, and they're in the most households because they've been grandfathered in all of the... ESPN strong-armed almost all of these cable companies into offering them on their tiers and giving them $7 per person per month to get $8 billion per year. What is going to be interesting to note is what happens when ESPN realizes that they can't pay this kind of money for rights fees anymore. because ESPN will be fine. Won't you? Do you agree? As long as they have live sports.
Yes, absolutely.
Because that's the only reason for me that I watch ESPN anyway, is for live sports. So I watched the Yankees last night. I'll watch the NFL draft tonight, part of it. Not a really big fan of the NFL Network coverage, but I just also just kind of want to see the stuff go. I like the noise.
But Trey Wingo's first draft, right?
Well, where he's doing the first round, yes.
Yeah. But, I mean, first he's one where he's the guy.
Right. So there are many, many, many people still watching this. And this number will eventually even out and stop dropping as far as it's going. But ESPN is losing subscribers, that's true. But they're also not counting guys like me who subscribe to Sling TV. Which, when you talk about losing a subscriber, they lost one in me. But then I resubscribed with another service. Nielsen doesn't take that into account. So there's 3 million of us that are buying ESPN through Sling TV, or maybe more than 1 million, 2 million people who are buying it, but that doesn't get counted. Regardless, the live sports fees is what's going to be interesting. Because the SEC network, we talk about how much the SEC pays out every year to each team. They got really fat on it. Big Ten got really fat on these rights deals. NFL got mad fat on these deals. Who's going to be able to pay this type of money going forward? Who's going to be able to pay this type of money when the new rights deals come out?
Yeah, I don't know if anyone's going to be able to come in and pay more.
Because NFL, I mean, ESPN is paying $1 billion for just play for just Monday Night Football.
Yeah. Fox pays less for everything they get, which includes two Super Bowls.
ESPN lost over $100 million on the NFL playoff game that they had because they paid so much for it and ended up getting Oakland and Houston this last year.
Yeah, it doesn't help.
So
what's the solution in your mind? What's the solution?
Well, the solution is try to get these rights deals back under control. But the market's going to kind of take care of that. It's interesting to see if Amazon's going to try to get more into football or some of these other – because Fox Sports can't get that rich into it unless they just want to get into the model that ESPN got into, which is going to lose them a whole lot of money.
Sure.
ABC, NBC.
Netflix has already said we're out.
Where are you going to where's all this money going to go? What cable network can afford to pay for college football at this level? ESPN's the only one. So ESPN, to a degree, can kind of set the market price back to a lower number.
Do you think
we kind of started that with the Big Ten, where they sort of split that package?
Well, let me ask you this: do you think that there is ever a time when the SEC, the Big Ten, the NBA, the NFL, whatever pull a
the
Tom,
NBA they paid way too much money,
whatever pull a Tom Brady for ESPN, and say we still want some of our content delivered to your viewers? We want to be involved in your network. We want to extend this out, and we'll sort of restructure our deal with you. Or is it always going to be, no, we're shopping this for top dollar, and we don't care where it goes?
I think there will
Adam Silver, in my opinion, would be very smart to sit back and say, maybe Amazon's offering us more money, but how many people are going to go get our product there? It's a real question. And I know it's easy for people to say, oh, Amazon's everywhere. Okay. But how many people's homes are even set up to watch a game on Amazon the way they've traditionally watched a basketball game?
Who has Amazon Prime? What percentage of America has Amazon Prime or would get Amazon Prime?
Do you have a smart TV?
To watch
Do you have a device hooked up to your television that would allow you to be able to watch something via the internet on your actual television? Not your tablet, not your laptop, not your phone, but on your 60-inch that you paid a couple grand for. How many people are set up and wired for that right now?
It's ESPN, despite what people are trying to tell you that the world is falling down, they're still in a position of strength because they still have the market saturated as far as number of households they're in. There's still over 80 million households that they are in. The market will eventually level out. Is it 50 million or is it 20 million? Apparently about 50% of U.S. households have Prime.
Wow. I'm not one of those.
I'm not one of them either. But
the reality is FS1 actually lost more households than ESPN in February. But like you brought up earlier, no one's talking about that.
FS1 charges like a dollar, so like a dollar and a half per subscriber.
It's like you said, ESPN got chubby, and now they're having to give some things up to get back in shape.
Because what they did is they overpaid so much for college football, for the Big Ten, for the SEC, for basketball, NBA in particular. They overpaid so much that now they're in a bit of a quandary. They're having to cut back where they didn't think they would have to. And to be fair to everyone in this conversation, ESPN was slow to realize that people were going to cut the cord. But it's not because of liberal people on ESPN.
Oh, well, you should ask Dale Jackson that at 9 o'clock when he comes in, because he believes it is.
Has nothing to do with
that. He believes it is because he saw it on Facebook.
It has nothing to do with that because you're going to.
We'll talk to Dale at 9 o'clock.
Where are you going to watch your football?
We'll talk to Dale at 9 o'clock about it. We'll take a break now. Come back and talk NFL draft with Kevin Weidel. Welcome back in Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. Let's welcome in Kevin Weidel. You can follow him on Twitter at Kevin_Weidel, WEIDL, NFL draft expert. Kevin, good morning, man. How you doing?
Cole, what's going on, man? How's it going?
Oh, it's going great. Excited for the draft tonight. RKShea brought up a pretty good question earlier in the show.
I do that a lot, Kevin. Kevin, I do that a lot.
And that was... there are a lot of positions of strength in this draft, but there are a few positions of weakness. For me, of course, offensive line stands out first. I think it's the worst offensive line class I've seen since I've been paying attention to the draft. The quarterback class is not strong. I threw in linebacker sort of after Foster and McMillan, at least inside linebacker, not outside guys. But what are the weakest positions in this draft, in your opinion?
I think it's offensive tackle, Cole. It's just, we're used to seeing a bunch of guys near the top in the top 10, and I don't think there's a guy worth it. And I think you'll probably see Cam Robinson be the first tackle off the board from what I'm hearing talking with teams. And to me, really, he played like a second rounder the last 2 years, and I think you would probably agree with that when you're watching his tape. Now, he's got first-round ability, he's got feet, he's got length, he's got everything you look for. It's just the consistency, playing on his feet, playing with balance. Getting a little bit stronger in his upper body to sustain blocks. So to me, I just don't see an offensive, tackle worthy of a top, 15 type pick. So I would say that would be one, and then the quarterbacks would be next in line. It's a developmental quarterback class. There's no, one guy. I think Mitchell Trubisky is the guy that's kind of separated himself from the pack. But I mean, how great do you feel about him with 13 starts coming in and starting right away and playing right away and playing well? So you better have a plan for him. I look at it and I would say quarterbacks and offensive tackles really is a down year for them.
I sort of compared Mitch Trubisky to a guy that we saw 2 years ago working a game in Starkville, and that was Jeff Driskel at Louisiana Tech, sort of a hybrid spread air raid system, half field reads. How would you describe the system that he played in at North Carolina, and how does that translate to the NFL?
Well, he's from the gun. I mean, they didn't really work under center too much, and it was a lot of spread half-field reads, like you mentioned. So, a lot of these guys, it all depends on how they were trained. I never really got a North Carolina game. I never got it with their staff. But, for a lot of quarterbacks coming out with and from spread systems, the thing that's shocking to me is a lot of them don't know how to read the safeties, coming from college and playing in a multiple pro-style system. When I played at quarterback position, I was always trained to read the safeties. They tell you everything, I'm sure. Guys like Greg McElroy coming from Alabama will tell you the same thing. And so it's a learning curve, not only, depending on what system you come from reading coverages, reading safeties, to locating fronts and everything else, but also having to place the ball in tighter windows and make quicker decisions. So the mental part of it, I think, becomes even worse of a learning curve, even steeper of a learning curve than it is physically for these guys. And that's why it's so tough. Make that jump from the college level to the NFL level.
How can you explain to Kevin Weidel, NFL draft analyst with us, follow him on Twitter at Kevin_Weidel. How can you explain what's happened with the quarterback position since Clemson defeated Alabama in January? Because my belief, Kevin, is, and if you saw it differently, I want you to tell me that, no, that wasn't the way that most draft analysts or scouts or GMs saw it. When that game was over, Deshaun Watson was being argued as a potential number one pick. There was no mention of Patrick Mahomes in the first round. There was no mention of Mitch Trubisky in the first round. And now all of a sudden, we got those guys. I mean, I think the only other guy who might have been mentioned as a first-round quarterback was Davis Webb out of Cal. Now, Deshaun Watson might not go in the top 20, and Trubisky might go one, and all of a sudden, Patrick Mahomes, who I have seen just make miserable throws, is considered to be the second or third quarterback off the board. What happened from when that game ended to right now?
The scouting process, Cole. Scouting process. And that can play tricks on you, and you're seeing it right now, I think. I like Mitch Trubisky. I think he's great from the pocket. I think he's probably throws a little more accuracy, anticipation. And then Patrick Mahomes, the arm strength and the ability to make throws off balance. And just not many guys can do it. You know, the one thing I keep hearing about Deshaun Watson is, yeah, he's a winner, but we think he's reached his ceiling talent-wise, physically. And, you know, that's the one thing I'm getting from scouts is the but. I don't think he has that physical, you know, as high of a ceiling as these guys. But to me, I look at a guy that's a proven winner, a guy that's played big in big moments every time that he needed to and raised his teammates up. I mean, look at the two games against Alabama. Those are NFL defenses, Cole. I cannot wait to look back and see in these past 2 years how many guys from these Alabama defenses from last year and the year before that are playing in the NFL and playing at a high level and what Deshaun Watson was able to do to that team. So, to me, I look at all these quarterbacks, and, yeah, I see the upside, and, yeah, I see the ability. But, to me, I want the guy that's battle-tested. I want the guy that's proven, played well in big moments. And a guy like, you know, you learn from a guy like Dak Prescott last year, who I thought was a fifth-round pick, and I thought he had accuracy issues, and I thought it was going to take a while for him to develop. But he was a great leader, and that's what I underestimated. And he was a highly, highly competitive guy, and I think that Deshaun Watson has that in his blood. So we'll see where he lands, and it might be the best thing for him to fall a little bit, Cole, because he can get with a better team, maybe sit for 1 or 2 years and step in and be that starter.
So Kevin Weidel sort of answering the question that Arky and I both asked earlier is what is the one thing that is keeping scouts, general managers, head coaches away from wanting to take Watson, and that is maybe you would agree they think he's reached his ceiling from an ability standpoint.
That's it. That's all right. The one area I'm hearing from.
So let's move on. Let's move on to these Alabama guys. O.J. Howard, Reuben Foster, Jonathan Allen, Marlon Humphrey, Cam Robinson. Will Alabama have five players selected in the first round?
They will. I'm pretty confident saying they will on that. I think Marlon Humphrey is going to go higher than a lot of people think. I think he has problems playing the ball down the field, but there's a lot to like about his size, physicality, his length, his range, his fluidity. Just got to get a little better when his back's to the football. I talked about Cam Robinson. As much as he's got some flaws, just the physical tools with him, I think, of all the offensive tackles and the way he can come in and be a run blocker, maybe potentially move him in the guard early on like we saw with Laramie Tunzel. I think that might be working to his advantage, and I think he'll come off the board. But those other three guys, Reuben Foster might slide a little bit, but he's not going to slide far. I think he's one of the top three players in this draft. And then Jonathan Allen and O.J. Howard, I think, will both end up coming off the board in the top 10. I really do.
How far, realistically, could Foster and Allen – I think I saw somebody had Allen at 14 yesterday, and I'm just thinking, man, that legitimately hurts my feelings to see a kid who I enjoy watching play the game so much, and I know is such a stand-up individual and plays the game the way it should be played, fall that far. But worst-case scenario for Foster and Allen, where do they end up?
Well, I think Allen, I still think he goes in the top 10. Cole, I was talking to a couple scouts yesterday and one GM said, you know, I don't think he's going to fall out of the top 10. Maybe slide, maybe not that top five, but I think in the back half there, you're looking maybe Carolina, Cincinnati could end up right in that range, even Buffalo. So I think that's where you'll see him kind of come off the board. And then with Foster, I think it's right in that 13 to 17 area, Cole, starting with the Arizona Cardinals at 13. The Eagles at 14, the Colts could really use a guy like Foster in that front seven at 15, and you got the Ravens after that, and the Redskins at 17, all need inside linebacker help and front seven help. I think you're going to see Foster slide right in that area, the 13 to 17 range, and someone's going to get a heck of a football player.
So if the Saints, who just picked up Adrian Peterson, you would think that means they're going to go defense. I thought Foster would be a perfect fit there. If they don't go Reuben Foster, where do you think the Saints go at 11?
Well, I've been hearing corner, and I think Marlon Humphrey is the name I continue to hear with them just because of what they play. You know, they want to play press zone scheme, and I think he's going to come in and maybe be that goalie. That's why I think he's going to go a lot earlier than people think. I think maybe the Saints with Son Reddick as well from Temple, that versatility that he brings, one of the more red-hot names in this draft class mm-hmm. right now. I think he would be a great fit there in New Orleans. But I expect New Orleans to address the front seven with their first couple picks because they need a lot of help on that end of the ball.
A lot of uncertainty, obviously, at the top, especially once you get past maybe the Myles Garrett, the Mitchell Trubisky's of the world. Who do you think that may go really high tonight has the biggest chance of becoming a, I don't want to be mean and say a bust, but someone who doesn't pan out long term?
Oh, man. That is always a tough question, to be honest with you. Just looking at the board, guys that could go early that I think might not pan out.
Or yeah. who are people high on that you don't agree with?
I like O.J. Howard. Let me put it this way. I think O.J. Howard's a really good football player. I think he's a tight end he's going to come in and contribute for a long time and be a good blocker and catch the football and all that stuff. I just am not as high as a top 10 player as a lot of these people are. I think he's got to get a little bit better with his route awareness at times. I think some of the routes that he ran at Alabama, he was cut loose because of the scheme. So to me, I would say O.J. Howard would be the guy that I would think would be just drafted too high for a top 10 pick and maybe reached. And then Christian McCaffrey as well. I think he's a really good football player, guys, and he does a lot. And he can help you out in the passing game, in the running game, and he gives you a lot as a returner. He's got to go to the right scheme. Sean Payton for the New Orleans Saints would be a great scheme for him. Andy Reid for the Kansas City Chiefs, great. Doug Peterson with the Eagles, awesome. And even the Patriots. But Christian McCaffrey's got to go somewhere where they can maximize his skill set, get creative, and get his touches because he's not a guy that's going to carry the ball 20 times a game in the league. He's going to have 10 carries, 7 catches, and maybe 4 or 5 touches on punt return. So, to me, Christian McCaffrey and O.J. Howard will be the two guys that I think cannot pan out to what they're to maximize their skill set. More McCaffrey where he ends up in the scheme-wise.
Did you see that video of him and his feet being so super fast? Doesn't that change your mind?
Say it again?
Didn't you see that video of him moving his feet super fast? Doesn't that change your mind?
McCaffrey?
Yeah. Come on, man. That was fast-forwarded now. Everybody knows
fast-forwarded.
That
one. Kevin Weidel with this NFL draft expert. Follow him on Twitter, @Kevin_Weidel, W-E-I-D-L. Selfishly, I want to know where you think Pittsburgh goes at 30. There's going to be a lot of good pass rushers there. I think we would all agree with that. But what do you think the Steelers try to do at pick 30?
I'll say this, Cole. I think they go with an edge rusher. Tack McKinley, if he's there for UCLA, would be a great fit. A guy that plays really hard off the edge, speed, explosive speed rusher out of UCLA. Keep an eye out for TJ Watt as well. I like the versatility and what he can bring from Pittsburgh in terms of dropping in the coverage. Can get after the pass rush, and if need be, he can slide inside if they need him to. So I think TJ Watt, Tack McKinley, two guys to keep an eye out, Cole.
What about Cowboys in round one?
They got a good defense. They got to go heavy, heavy defense. I look for a cornerback position or a safety. It's deep in both spots. I think a guy like Quincy Wilson could fit the bill there. Buda Baker, don't sleep on him as well. Adoree Jackson could be a big name. Listen, Adoree Jackson out of USC, his name's red hot. I think he skits into that first round range, one of the more explosive players in this entire draft.
There you go. Kevin Weidel, great stuff as always, man. Look forward to your coverage this weekend. Follow him on Twitter, @Kevin_Weidel. Kev, appreciate the time, man. Today especially, I really do appreciate it, man. Look forward to catching up soon.
All right, thanks, Cole. Appreciate it, man. Take care.
Kevin Weidel joining us. He says Dallas goes defense regardless. Is it not just maybe a best player available at that point in time for Dallas? Best defensive player available?
It's got to be. They need pass rush help. Corner. They dropped a couple of their corners in the offseason. A couple of defensive backs. I mean, they were, wouldn't you argue, great. Like, Mo Claiborne wasn't great, but, you know, Carr wasn't great, but they were good and serviceable.
I think Adoree Jackson at least is a name to be excited about there at 28.
Oh, sure, it'd be super exciting, but I just, you got to hit the defense first. Best defense available.
All right, we'll get to a break. Coming back with more Cube Show right after this.